Good morning and welcome to this abbreviated back chat. I'm Hugh Chiverton and your co-host this morning is Peter Lewis. Peter, good morning,
good morning to you again.
Well, we've just been listening to the Financial Secretary answering public comments and answering questions on the budget, which he delivered this week. Many on different aspects of that $10,000 for every Hong Kong permanent resident that has been promised by the administration, although heat not burned tobacco, apparently also uppermost in many minds. Well, now's your chance to follow up and discuss further the issues and matters raised by the Financial Secretary and by the budget speech from this week. And you can do that by emailing us, backchat@rthk.hk, or commenting on our Facebook page. We're not going to take calls for this section of the programme, but we skipped the emails for while the Financial Secretary was here. So now's your chance to send us an email and we'll do our best to read out the messages. Backchat@rthk.hk once again is the message, and our Facebook page is Backchat on RTHK Radio 3 if you've got anything to say. And we're joined for this portion of the programme by shareholder activist David Webb is on the line.
Good morning.
Good morning, David. A lot of questions, as expected, to the Financial Secretary about the $10,000 handout. In particular, quite a few people expressed concerns that this was too broad, that it wasn't targeted enough, that people who don't deserve it could apply, such as people living abroad. Even people who are dead apparently might be able to get it. What are your thoughts? Is this really the right way to go about spending our fiscal reserves?
No, it's fiscally irresponsible. I almost fell off my chair when I heard the Financial Secretary just now say that this was a broadly balanced budget. It's not. It's if you look at the numbers and take away the chicanery in it, then they're running about next year, or the current year, a 50% deficit against revenue. I'll come back to that point later, but on the $10,000, which, you know, by the way, just happens to be a power of 10. I don't think there's a lot of science in whether it should be 10 or 9 or 11. They just think, well, 10 sounds like a big round number. It's quite obvious what it really is. It's a vote-buying effort. It's to try to placate the people ahead of September Legislative Council elections. That's why it's aimed only at permanent residents, not people who've been paying taxes for 6 years here and are not yet permanent residents. And if they're going to do that, then why not be honest about it and use a very simple approach to determine who can get it, which is whether you're on the electoral register or not, because only permanent residents who live in Hong Kong can actually have an address in Hong Kong and thereby be on the register of voters. That would tend to exclude people who have left, 25 years ago and are living in Vancouver or Birmingham or somewhere else. They would find it quite hard to get registered. The FS used excuses about the banks having to modify their systems. That's not true. They've done it once before, and they don't have to remodify their systems to allow people to apply. I applied online through a bank in 2011 for my share, a great many people did, the majority, I think. Also, for those who are already receiving welfare payments for CSSA, old age living allowance, fruit money, and so on, they pretty much all receive it electronically from the government to their bank accounts. So the government already knows their ID numbers and their bank accounts and can simply add $10,000 to the extra month bonus that they're paying of welfare payments in this budget.
Mr. Chan said he was doing this because he wanted to ensure that it supported and boosted the economy. But is there really any guarantee that this time it's almost like helicopter money, isn't it?
It's not much different. They're calling it helicopter money after Ben Bernanke's theory of helicopter Ben money.
So it doesn't guarantee it gets into the economy, does it? It actually boosts the economy.
No, some people will save it. Some people will pay off their loans. Some people will spend it overseas if they're claiming from Vancouver, as I mentioned, or somewhere else. Others might spend it in a shop on imported goods, which only adds a small margin to the local economy if they're buying, say, a phone made in China or some other item. So it's not a sensible way to run a budget. They have hoarded and run a structural surplus for the last 22 years since the handover. They've hoarded public money, and they should be returning it. But remember who paid it in the first place, the taxpayers. Why not actually make some permanent reductions in the rates of salaries tax and profits tax, raise the personal allowances, flatten out the tax bands, stop messing around with things like a 50% rate of profits tax, you know, half off. The first 2 million, which is just a gimmick designed to.
I know. Yeah. But if you wanted to help businesses, and you know, it's very, very real for loads and loads of businesses, especially small businesses in Hong Kong, who don't have a lot of fallback, don't have a lot of room, don't have a lot of resources. They're really struggling at the moment. How would you help them? Can you think of a better way? I mean, there are always pros and cons.
Businesses have good times and bad times, sometimes through natural disasters like we're having effectively now. Others through government-inflicted policies, which triggered the protest movement last year,
and sometimes for political issues, which are global issues, which are beyond our control, and sometimes for all three. And at the moment, you've got everything happening at the same time.
To use Ravi's words when he called in just now, that is capitalism. You have the ups and downs. You have profits when you're doing well. You have losses when you're not doing well. If you are long-term profitable, you will have reserves that you can use for occasions like this. And it shouldn't be the government's job to support the marginally profitable or loss-making companies, effectively watering the weeds and preventing the flowers from growing.
But we are going to have a lot of small businesses potentially going bankrupt pretty soon because of the dire situation the economy is in, isn't it?
You get that in economic downturns, and that's part of the cathartic process of free markets that allows people to reallocate resources and labour to start-ups, to new businesses, and to more efficient businesses. Not all businesses that are small are efficient and they often can't justify their economic place in the world. Sometimes it's better to run businesses on large scale. Supermarkets, for example, even in a properly competitive environment, don't work very well if they only have one outlet. They don't have the buying powers and the warehousing and the economies of scale.
So what do we do about some of the employees of those firms who are going to become unemployed?
Well, you make sure that you have a proper welfare system that people can quickly and efficiently access if they are out of work and out of savings.
Which we don't.
We do have CSSA, and it is available to people who are out of work and out of savings or very low on savings. That could be improved upon if we weren't spraying money around at other people. There's 71 billion. I did some numbers on the population yesterday. That implies 7.1 million claims.
I think there might be an administration judge.
$2 billion for the cost of handing out the 71.
No. Yeah. He was talking about 6.9 billion. Six point nine million people who would a permanent residence.
The budgeted amount is 71 billion.
Yeah.
So if that does include costs, then it's 2 billion of costs. Call it 6.9 million claims.
It's 200,000, isn't it? I mean, yeah.
69. If you're
there are 6.9
billion claims, then that's $69 billion dollars. $10,000 times 6.9 million. Okay, so now what I was going to say is that if you look at our population figure of 7.5 million, that includes 370,000 odd foreign domestic helpers, 1.07 million children who don't qualify, whatever their immigration status, and about 200,000 residents, non-permanent residents. So take those numbers away, and you end up with about 5.9 million permanent residents. That implies that there are about 1 million non-resident permanent residents, if you can believe that term, who will stand to claim approximately 10 billion Hong Kong dollars that will go straight out of the economy. So, economic madness. There are much better ways to stimulate the economy than this.
Okay. We got a lot of emails, some of which were kind of addressed to the financial secretary, but which kind of raise interesting issues, so I'll sort of recycle those if that's okay.
I'll just say the timing, though. August payments, right before a September election. How more obvious could it be?
All right. S says, just heard a caller's concern regarding the use of ID cards and deceased persons. I thought that one needs to come to Hong Kong at least once in 3 years to revalidate the permanent ID cards.
Are a non-Chinese, is the answer.
Yeah, that's you don't have three stars.
If you're born in Hong Kong to a Hong Kong Chinese permanent resident, then you are a permanent resident, basically for life.
Okay. K says, without coming to Hong Kong, K says banks are required to have the permanent address of all depositors. Why not make it a requirement that the bank's records show a Hong Kong address for all applicants for the $10,000? That might be an option. Jay says, this is addressed to the Financial Secretary again, your decision to gift $10,000 to non-resident permanent ID card holders is baffling. Please explain how this will increase consumption in Hong Kong. Was this budget even discussed with Exco? If not, what's the purpose of Exco? Some Exco members don't know the contents of your budget. Why not take up road building or countryside cleaning projects with people who have been laid off? That was Jay's suggestion. Sam says, I'm baffled why the Financial Secretary did not follow the recently concluded District Council voter registration list. This was your suggestion, wasn't it? To use the voter registration list.
Yes, because you on pain of perjury and so on, you have to make a declaration when you apply to vote that you actually live in the constituency.
Sam goes on. Also, why he failed to announce a three-month rent waiver for the tenants. Three-month waiver on mortgages for home buyers. It's the landlord who benefit through every budget. That's Sam's talk.
That's also the case for the rates waiver as well, isn't it? I mean, there's this now that his rate raised the waiver from a minimum of $1,000 to $2,500. Isn't it going to be developers who are going to benefit from them? The top 10 landlords in Hong Kong.
Isn't it 1,500? I thought it was 1,500.
Maybe 1,500. Sorry. Yeah.
There's a waiver for non-resident ratepayers in the budget of $5,000 for two quarters and then $1,500 for the next two quarters.
But it's businesses, it's landlords who are going to get the biggest benefits of this, aren't they? They're going to benefit. I saw one estimate that says they could save, you know, something like $250 million, just the top 10 landlords in Hong Kong.
I don't know what the structure of commercial tenants is, but I believe it's normally the tenant that pays the rates in a commercial lease. So it does relieve them. And the point is that they're not receiving, if they're running a shop or even an office, they may be receiving less revenue than normal because of the constraints of the health crisis.
But a lot of leases have rates exemptions, so in effect it goes directly to the landlords.
Then it would, yeah.
Okay.
And indeed, the SME scheme, in a way, benefits landlords by propping up their ability to pay the rent that they committed to, rather than letting them go bust and let the landlords deal with the problem and re-let the property to someone who does need it.
All right. Marcus says, if SS can say he will prioritise the needy in the $10,000 budget, handout, why can't he exclude the wealthy if he can segment like that? That comes from Marcus.
Well, in a way, he's done that on the salaries tax waivers, because it's only the first, the 100% waiver on the first 20,000 of tax liability. So the people who have consistently paid, and it's the top 10% of salaries tax of earners in Hong Kong pay 90% of the salaries tax anyway, and they're the ones that will continue to, because they're only going to be relieved of 20,000. So that's what they're doing there, and they've often done that in the past.
So how are we going to go about repairing this hole in our budget? Because our fiscal reserves at the moment, they're about 40% of GDP. They're going to drop to about 26% of GDP in 5 years' time. That's quite a big fall. We've got to do something, haven't we, to try and reverse this. How's it going to be done?
They could go on like this for quite a few years, because apart from the currently $1,100 billion in the reserves, there's also another $600 billion in the exchange fund surplus. As I say, once you start doing this kind of program, you raise the expectation, the moral hazard politically, of having to do it quite often rather than do sensible things with the money. I mean, if we were to go to a 10% rate of salaries tax and profits tax across the board and reduce the reserves that way by running a sort of a deficit for the next 20 years to gradually bleed the money back into the economy from which it was taken, then that would be hugely stimulative. It would, you know, attract businesses to locate here, to put their headquarters here, professionals to come here.
Okay, but he was just quite interesting. You know, he mentioned that OECD initiative to stop exactly that happening, or to stop a race to the bottom with tax rates.
Doesn't rule Hong Kong. I mean, China indirectly rules Hong Kong, but the OECD doesn't. And as long as we are fair to all sectors, and we don't engage in favoritism to a particular company, then I don't.
But
think
the, but the reality is, well, no, but you know, the reality is that there are, when we all know the names, the big multinational companies, some of the biggest in the world, who are now paying very little tax anywhere because they're dodging around, and
the action has been designed to stop, and it is stopping.
Yeah.
The European Union basically fined Ireland for giving Apple a special deal and made them reverse it. Ireland actually objected to being fined and wanted to carry on with that deal, but I think that they're losing or have lost that.
I don't know, you know, but there might be a lot of popular support for that, for an arrangement like that.
The point is that you have to show a substance to your business, that you're not just using Hong Kong as a letterbox for to get a lower tax rate, and that would remain the case as it is now. So we certainly can. The Secretary can't use that as an excuse not to think about lowering tax rates.
But there is a risk, isn't there?
Heading the other way, though. Hong Kong is heading more and more towards a centrally planned big government economy. They quietly dropped the target of public expenditure limited to 20% of GDP 3 years ago. And now it's targeted for 27% of GDP.
I don't know. You say that, David, but I mean, but you know, there are plenty of people, plenty of American think tanks or whatever, who still hold up Hong Kong as a model for a free market economy, one that isn't centrally planned.
Well, there's two: the Heritage Foundation and another one. You know, they don't look so much at the domestic economy they would certainly start to revise it if we kept growing our government footprint the way we've been doing. Another example is on the environment. Rather than charge diesel duty on vehicles, because of our electoral structure and the votes they have in the election committee and LegCo, we're instead going to throw $7.1 billion at them to convert their vehicles from Euro 4 to Euro 5. And we've done that in the past from Euro 3 to Euro 4. It seems like every few years there's another 10 billion or so handout. It was 10 billion last time. Rather than putting some stick instead of a carrot and saying, we're going to ban these vehicles after a certain number of years. You can keep owning them if you want, but you can't drive them on our roads. And we're going to start charging diesel duty to pay for any expiration payments that we actually make. They're charging duty on petrol, but not on diesel, which is just inconsistent. Another thing in the budget I noticed that came out yesterday, the land sale program, they're adopting what they call the two-envelope approach for a huge piece of land in Central. I would call it the brown envelope approach, frankly, because once you deviate from the highest bidder wins approach, having set your lease conditions, which may include a certain amount of public space and so forth, but if you then say, let's look at the bids and let's look at the designs and we'll have a beauty parade and so on, then it opens the door to influence peddling and corruption. And they seem to have forgotten the lessons of the original proposals for West Kowloon, where they wanted a single developer and they had this beauty parade. You need to have highest bidder wins, even if it does turn out to be the people who own the site next door, or it turns out to be a mainland
Or it turns out to be a monstrosity, which is an eyesore.
That's why you have the town planning.
That's
board.
Capitalism. You have to put up with
because they still have to get through
hideous buildings.
If you win the bid for the piece of land, you haven't finished. You've still got to get approvals for your from the town planning board for your actual development. There are other ways to do that. You can put conditions in the lease, or height limits, spread limits, you know, the site coverage and requirements for parks and things. All sorts of things can go into the lease, and then you say, what am I bid? And you sell it to the highest bidder, and you're not accused of favouring anyone.
One of the measures on housing, what do you make of his proposal to introduce fixed-rate mortgages, which surely must be a good idea? I mean, it surprises me that we haven't had them before, but...
it's mission creep again for a government entity that shouldn't be in this business. The Hong Kong Mortgage Corporation should be shut down or sold off. And if the private sector wants to offer fixed-rate mortgages, which they do, by the way, on some tenure, then they can do that. But what they're doing is invading the private sector by stepping into the shoes and saying, oh, well, we don't think the banks are going to do this. We'll do it ourselves, and we'll undercut them in some way by offering attractive rates. Or we'll offer unattractive rates and not get any takers. But why is the government doing that at all? The same with annuities. Why are they doing that at all?
But the total loan amount for this scheme is only $1 billion. Surely that's way too small to make a difference, isn't it?
Small, and then they go, well, that was popular. We'll up it to $10 billion and so on. Pretty soon you realise the government's taking over a piece of the mortgage market or the insurance market in the case of annuities. I mean, it wasn't long ago that they announced a microfinance scheme as if there wasn't already a vibrant credit market in Hong Kong for personal loans. You know, they're always looking for things for these quangos to do. The mortgage corporation shouldn't be doing this. Another thing in the proposals is something called the Hong Kong Growth Fund underneath the Exchange Fund. And what that is a proposal to have direct investments in what the government decides through its hand-picked advisors is a promising Hong Kong business or sector. And that's worrying on a number of fronts. First of all, it bypasses LegCo, which would normally need to give approval for setting up a venture capital fund, as they have done before under the Innovation and Technology Fund. So even if you think it's a good idea, it should at least go through LegCo approval rather than be done through our exchange fund outside the oversight of LegCo. Secondly, it competes with the private sector because we do have a venture capital market. We do have people willing to fund good proposals. And thirdly, of course, it opens the door to influence peddling if you tilt the selection of investments in favour of friends.
Okay.
It's a very bad idea.
All right. Some thoughts from listeners. H in an email says, need David Webb for financial secretary in Hong Kong, please. And
I sit by the phone waiting for the call.
Well, Craig on Lantau says, with the subject line, collecting your 10K in person. He says, so our smart ID cards are safe and secure. Why not implement a process to claim your $10,000 in cash by, one, presenting your ID card to a modified Hong Kong bank ATM with an attached fingerprint reader. Second, once you are identified, the bank's ATM dispenses 2K and the same on the next four visits, which must be 30 days apart. As a result, it's dispensed automatically and over time, which means if you're ordinarily resident in Canada, you might come here and only claim $2,000 before heading home. You're also likely to be spending the money in shops and not on a large purchase on the Apple Store. Simple, really. That comes from Craig in Lantau.
Well, I think Craig should probably be Secretary of Financial Services.
But it would take so long. It would take so long, Craig. Okay, Ben says, this is for you, Peter. Ben says, I believe there is no perfect way to distribute $10,000 to Hong Kongers. We say we need efficiency, speed and accuracy, etc. But why we award the money from the government? Because the poor administration of leadership, no democracy in Hong Kong, the CE and tops of Hong Kong governance are authorized by Beijing. The more they become more and more fond of the directions of mainland policies. And the government tries to bribe Hong Kong people to forget the anti-extradition bill exercise and two excess policy forces for the last 8 months. It's ridiculous to increase the budget of policy for the police by 25%. I'm strongly against it. That was from Ben. Thanks very much indeed for that. Any more comments as it stands? The $10,000 is going to happen. If you wanted to, just very, very briefly, if you wanted to broaden the tax base or look for alternative sources of revenue, where would you find them, David Webb?
Well, look, if we needed to raise more money rather than spend what we have more carefully, the simplest way to do it is to adjust the existing rates of tax on the least intrusive forms of tax, which are profits tax and salaries tax, because no one is deterred from setting up a business by the prospect of making a profit and then having to pay some tax on it. And ditto, no one's deterred within Hong Kong from taking a job by the prospect of having to pay the salaries tax Obviously, it becomes a competitive issue if we raise it too much, because then people will say, well, it's no longer the best place to book my profits or to work. I'd rather book my profits in the mainland, for example. It's no secret that a fair amount of our tax base is from the re-export of products from the mainland and the design work that goes into them in Hong Kong. So you do have to bear in mind the competition when you do that, but it's the least intrusive form. Other forms of tax are very inefficient, and you don't just if you have a low, if you need to raise more revenue, adjust your existing rates, but don't start doing things like they have done with the so-called cooling measures. I mean, do we really need cooling measures anyway now is the question. And secondly, they never worked in the first place because they are a transaction tax, extra stamp duty on the movement of assets. Even when you're making a loss when you sell it, the stamp duty still has to be paid on the transaction. And penalties for selling your property within 3 years when it's your property and under the basic law you should be able to sell it whenever you want, and so on. So, okay. You know, those measures are still in place. The government's become hooked on
stamp duty. They have said...
It's budgeting $70 billion of stamp duty next year.
Okay. They have said they will remain in place for the foreseeable future. David Webb, thank you very much indeed for joining us this morning. Thank you very much indeed for your observation. Peter, many thanks to you.
Thank you, Hugh.
Always interesting doing the financial secretary.